no dejaremos que cierren la linda puerta que siempre ha estado abierta a la vida.
You're listening to Latin Radical with Warwick Fry.
And this week we're talking to Laura Pullen, our Salvadoran specialist. Laura,
you're keeping track of the situation in El Salvador. Now, last week we spoke a little bit about the Suchitoto 13 who were arrested under terrorist charges for the simple act of protesting about the privatisation of their water supplies. They did sort of get off, but not absolutely. Can you give us a bit of an update on what's happened with the Suchitoto 13?
Yes, certainly, Warwick, and be glad to do so. It's a very sad situation because, in fact, with the arrests and particularly the initial detention of the activists under El Salvador's anti-terrorist legislation, which is not dissimilar to Australia's anti-terrorist legislation or the United States, I mean, this is state-of-the-art anti-terrorism legislation that people are using all around the world to repress political movements as well as supposedly targeting international terrorism. So these people were protesting against the privatisation of water, as your listeners will remember, and had taken direct action, I guess, in terms of, but peaceful action, protesting. No different to how we would protest here, I believe. They were pretty harassed at the time, treated by the police force, which is more of a paramilitary unit, as they tend to be when they're dealing with this and implementing counter-terrorism legislation. They tend to be counter-terrorism type units, more paramilitary in their outlook than policing. It's that shift we've seen over the last decade or so in the whole world in terms of international policing.
Well, we've seen it up here in Nimbin with the drug law reform. They sent in riot police to keep going.
We see it at political protests as well here in Canberra, Sydney, Melbourne, some of those large global meetings that happen when there is an organisation of peaceful political dissent and protest. You see these counter-terrorism sort of units brought in to deal with it, and that was the same in this very quiet country town in El Salvador, the beautiful Lake Ilopango there. Suchitoto, the little village, was the site of the protest, and at the time they were carried away from where they were arrested. I mean, and they were protesting at a time that coincided with a presidential visit. So of course security would have been at its highest for that area. And when they were arrested, they were actually threatened with, and well documented and reported, they were actually being threatened with being pushed out of the helicopter into the lake, where many people were disappeared by death squads and military activities through the Civil War years. And they were told, would you like to become the next generation of disappeared, or the new generation of disappeared? So that's an important background, I think, for what's happened since then, and they were detained and jailed for a period of time. There were a couple of journalists who were arrested as part of that group of activists, although they were actually working in there as journalists at the time, and they've been very important in terms of documenting and reporting on what happened.
Mm.
But the youngest person that was arrested, all of the charges were dropped back in February.
Mm.
And so... One would say, well, the activists have been released. I'm sure that there would still be some sense of leftover business, if you like, of them being perhaps watched or monitored, particularly those who work for trade union organisations and were continuing to campaign, because the issue of water and the privatisation of water is turning into a pretty major issue in the elections and governance in the country.
Mm.
Unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, the youngest person who had been arrested as part of that group of activists was brutally murdered in the town of Suchitoto.
This is classic death squad tactics. I mean, this is like going right back to the 70s and the early 80s, Lara.
It's certainly hard to avoid that conclusion. I mean, when you look at the circumstances around... Yes, the modus operandi, the standard way that the death squads work, This is certainly in line with that, and that's the concern of the other activists, of course, and all of those decent, concerned Salvadoran citizens watching the situation. You know, it's like, wow, okay, they went through this pretty awful process. They were harassed, intimidated, jailed, threatened with possibly 60 years in jail under the law, under the anti-terrorism legislation. You know, all of this was a pretty huge stress.
But certainly...
and to be released and then have the first one assassinated straight after.
Well, it'd certainly be, yeah, it'd be an incredible deterrent to future actions or you know, protests of government policy. I mean, this is...
It can certainly work that way, and that's how I think how the brutality of the death squads is supposed to work, is to instill that fear across the population. That's certainly very well understood, and I think the other side of that is that it strengthens the resolve of those who understand that that's how it's working and that that's the nature of the struggle they have to face. And you can only understand it really in the unique context that is El Salvador and the Salvadoran civil war.
Yeah, and that's very disturbing. And actually, the report you did for us last week, Lara, attracted a bit of comment on our blog site where we podcast these programs. That's Vensol, vensol.blogsite.com. We got our first comment, and it was from an Australian who claims to be working in El Salvador, and he was trying to tell us that the death squads were just anti-Arena propaganda and we were talking crap.
Well, that's certainly the line that was run 30 or so years ago when people first started reporting on the death squads. It was being said that, oh, this is just fantastic propaganda, you know, this is incredulous, this is not happening.
I mean, when you hear it, it is hard to believe, isn't it? Because what these guys do, it really boggles the imagination. There are people out there doing that, yeah.
That's right, that human beings could do this to other human beings is it is difficult for people to conceptualise, and particularly if they haven't lived in a country where that sort of brutality just became a part of daily life, and you would walk down the street and you would see decapitated bodies or...
Yeah.
You know, bodies like pig's heads on stakes by the road. I mean, this sort of brutality is not, it is certainly alien to the Australian consciousness, I think.
Yeah, and of course we thought that was all over during the peace accords of 1991-92.
Yes, although if you recall, because of this whole question of impunity, and it's something that the United Nations and member countries haven't really addressed, this whole concept of impunity, and we're seeing it repeated in our neighbouring island of East Timor, the whole issue of holding to account the perpetrators of these crimes becomes very important. And even in the immediate time after the peace accords were signed, you were seeing executions in the classic death squad style and signature. And so it was very obvious that they were still operating, and in fact they were almost gloating about the impunity that went with the accords. And that was very difficult to swallow, and I often referred to Mariposa, our radio operator in El Salvador, who we've referred to many times on your show. Her brother was actually assassinated, you know, after the peace accords were signed. And just most recently, last year, her parents. So, you know, there's a continuity there. And,
yeah. What are these signs and characteristics, Lara? I know it's probably difficult, can you explain to us what the signature of the death squads are? What is, like, obviously, well, they like to leave their part. It's a bit like the mafia, yeah. They like to leave a sign.
Right. Yeah. That's right. There are certain signs. And, I mean, of course, we can't preempt. Obviously, a proper investigation needs to be carried out, and there is a high degree of violence. There are gangs that are operating and are well referred to and talked about in El Salvador and right through Latin America and North America, as there are, you know. We're pretty protected, I guess, here in Australia. We don't see the sorts of things that you see in other continents yet, and hopefully we won't ever. We have our own history. But there are the brutality is certainly one of them. Just certain ways that I guess they've been trained and continue to operate that investigators will be able to determine if they want to and if they want to make it public. But for the general population, it almost doesn't matter whether that's established forensically or not, because it has the same effect, and that is to pick off whether you're picking off key leaders of political and social movements or whether you're picking off new activists. It sends a message home to the whole population that they shouldn't go there, they shouldn't get involved in politics, even if politics is just about taking a bit of power and control in terms of their standards of living. You know, protesting, it's the privatisation of water, as we've mentioned mm-hmm. before, it's a life or death issue for people. You know, this is a clear signal of just don't go there.
Yeah, it makes you...
Make submissive. Yeah.
Makes you wonder about how we'll go with the privatisation of electricity in New South Wales, and of course it's not life or death yet, but who knows?
We have amazing freedom in this country to express ourselves and to engage in these struggles they're almost not comparable in a lot of ways, the situations, because here I guess it's ideological and
more theoretical.
It's more that people are not, there's no need for people to take direct action, to take issues into their own hands and become engaged. It's pretty comfortable generally. Mm.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair enough comment, and so it becomes harder. You know, it's when issues directly touch you that you tend to get involved, and if you're looking at a developing nation, and particularly one that's subject to the neoliberal, the effects of neoliberal economic policy, yeah, as El Salvador is, then it is it touches people at every level of their lives.